Blog Talk Radio.
Universe. This is Doug Kelly. It is November 20th, 2008, Thursday. Glad to have everybody here. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Grant Rudman-Dunst. Hey, Grant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Happy Thursday night. Getting close to the weekend.
Yeah, 1 week away from Thanksgiving. And here we are again with another great guest that we're looking forward to talking to. Ed Kraft will be with us here just momentarily. We invite you to give us a call in if you'd like to chat. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. You can also use that click-to-talk button on your Blog Talk screen if you've got a headset on your computer. And if you've got questions, you can always put them right there in the chat room. We'd take them there, too. So let's get on to our guest, Ed Kraft. He's got an interesting bio for everything from secret clearance from the Army, and it looks to have a very eclectic interest in paranormal topics. And so what I want to do this time is just let Ed kind of tell us a little bit about him. But Ed Kraft, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Hey, thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I was on your show
nice
a couple years
you.
Ago when you and Dusty were doing that, Dusty Smith, and it was an interesting deal. So, Ed, you apparently have a very eclectic interest in the paranormal. Would you agree with that?
Anomalous phenomenon. I think I can't stand that term paranormal. It's kind of an oxymoron
okay.
to me.
Okay, well let me back
word normal.
You have a rather eclectic interest in anomalous phenomena. Is that right, Ed?
Yeah, yeah, okay. I do. I look at that. Like I said, I look at that word as an oxymoron. When you put the word, you know, para, meaning outside the norm, you know, you put outside of the norm, and then you put it in front of the word normal, outside of normal is abnormal. So it's an oxymoron when you put the two together.
You know, we need to hook him up with Dr. Roll.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I understand
that.
That's kind of
contradictory. You know,
I actually agree with
together.
You. I actually agree with you, and the issue for me is that, you know, it's a slow transition, not so much for me, but for the field. And I'm with you. We're using anomalous phenomena a lot more. But, again, it's like, what do you, you know, what word do you use? But let's not get hung up on that. So you are a fellow at Pangea Institute as well, correct?
Right. That is correct.
Yeah. And we had Scott Marlowe on here, what was that, a week or two ago? Couple of weeks ago,
yep.
Talking about different things. That was on the day before Halloween.
Yeah, Scott used
and,
to be a co-host on the show, too, along with Dusty.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's
well, cool.
Scott started out co-hosting back, I think it was back in 96 or 97. He actually started out, he came on as a guest back in 95, I think. I had him on as a guest back in 95 or 96. He started co-hosting back in 97. That's how Scott and I first met.
That's great. Well, how did you get your start in anomalous phenomena?
Oh, Lord, have mercy. Mine goes back to my days as a kid, as far as the research end of it goes. In my first encounter, actual encounter myself, goes back to when I was a Boy Scout, but
Okay, everybody, I believe that we are back on. If you will give us just one moment, we'll get everybody connected. We had a glitch in the system, and I'm going to play a little bit of music here for just a moment. We'll be right back. Okay, folks, we are back. Apologize about the glitch. We are here with Grant and with Ed Kraft, our special guest tonight. Welcome back, Ed.
Thanks.
Now,
as we are back.
Yeah, as we were talking about, you were, I don't know if you lost your thought or not, but.
I have went with the rest of my mind years ago, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Okay, so we're talking about your eclectic interest in anomalous phenomena. And let's start out with some of the interesting things you've seen, heard, or discovered through your years involved in this.
Okay. As far as which route you want to go with that first?
Well, let's start with UFOs.
UFOs, not much to see there as far as what I've seen, but a lot of research involved with that. As far as what I've seen, there's only been three real incidents, and they involve just the lights, which are CE1s. And out of those, I have to discount at least one of them, being as is, you know, there really was no explanation for it. The other two, there were, according to the Hynek method. But the other two, I'm convinced, were one was actually natural phenomena. The other, of course, being man-made in a missile test, which I'm convinced of. And that I can actually prove. I was actually able to go back and date it to a specific location in Alabama at Huntsville in a specific test. So it did pan out. And that's another thing I get on my soapbox about so many times. People live so close and they don't pay attention to testing of things like missiles. And I've watched online so many times people will put out, especially thanks to YouTube. God, I hate YouTube when it comes to UFOs. People will take video. They'll get out with their video cameras, and they'll see these missile testing things. And they don't realize just how many U.S. bases, military bases there are. And they test these things. And even when they're not testing or firing off missiles, they're firing off other things. And if you don't know what you're looking at, they can look strange. But oftentimes, missiles can be seen from great distances. I mean, you don't have to literally be sitting right outside the perimeter of a base to see a missile launch, and especially at night when you can't really judge distance. And these things go off in phases. People think a missile is just a small little object, you know, a short 3 or 3 foot missile, 3 or 4 foot missile, and being launched off. Now, sometimes these things go off in phases, two stages. So they'll see it go off one stage, and then they'll see it separate, and they'll think, oh, well, it's just divided into two. This UFO is just divided into two. It's separated. It's become two UFOs, and now it's making these strange uncharacteristic tails. And, you know, something similar to what we see in, for instance, the most recent one, the Stevensville, for instance, Stevensville UFO.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You see the strange tail. Well, that's very characteristic of, for instance, a Minuteman missile.
You think they were firing off a Minuteman missile?
To me it looks very much like a Minuteman missile. But that's not what I think the Stevensville case is. But it looks very similar to it. But that's not, I actually have a different opinion of what that is. I'm actually working on a similar case right now here in Florida, where I've seen photographs and some video of a very similar object.
Mm-hmm.
And it was taken here in Florida on two separate occasions. Video was taken on one separate occasion here in South Florida. Another was taken in northern Florida, some photographs
mm-hmm.
of an object that looks identical to that object.
And you
so just for the basis of, I mean, for the benefit of our audience, Ed, what kind of configuration are we talking about here? That distinguishes?
This is a triangular configuration.
Okay,
is,
all right.
Is what,
okay.
is what the Stevensville object is said to be. But in the photographs and the video, the object does not appear, you know, it appears to be squiggly. I call it a squiggly object.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And that's very important. And I can get into detail on it more, but I don't want to go into too much detail in an open case right now.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly since these two objects and two separate locations seem to be tied very similar to that one.
Okay.
And I don't want to get into a whole lot on it right now.
Sure.
Like I said, I am working on this case right now. I do have a good idea of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But and I'll be happy to come back on and talk about it when I get a little further into it. But I do have a good idea on it.
That'd
All
be
right.
great.
What may be going on with it. And I don't
Terrific.
I think a lot of people are going to be real surprised on that one. But
All right.
let us
digress then. I think before the Skype gods frowned on us. Because, you know, Doug was, he dragged that Ouija board out again this week. But anyway, before the Skype gods frowned us, I think you kind of alluded to the fact that as a young person, a teenager, you saw like a hairy creature that kind of sounds
okay,
Bigfootish.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was something, there was a bipedal hairy creature in the swamps here, yes. And that was back when I was about 13, 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back when I was a scout. Now,
so like what,
remember,
like 12 years ago?
Yeah, thank you.
I actually
didn't believe it. I like it when I go on a show with someone that considers me young. Thank you.
All of our guests, we go to no means.
I needed that, believe me.
No old sparker when it comes to getting guests. We love to slap it. So was that down in southern Florida that you saw that?
Yeah, yeah, that was down here. That was actually out on Alligator Alley here.
Okay.
That was back in Big Cypher. But the Everglades were still here, okay?
Right.
Actually, where I live right now was nothing but swamp and woodland, and there was actually some pasture where I'm living right now. Now
so
it's
you
all condos.
Did a camp out down there
malls.
Or something when that happened?
Yeah, exactly. My scoutmaster at the time had a... he worked for Publix, and he was a manager there and had a buddy who had a cabin out in the middle of the swamps there and on a hammock.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a one of those stilt jobbies out there. And we actually had to park out. Back then, where Alligator Alley is now is not where it was back then. They've actually moved the road.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've actually redone it and moved it over some. And they've actually moved it, you know, rebuilt it through the swamp there. But they put up a nice fence along the side of the road to keep the gators from crossing and the panthers from coming across and everything
yeah.
else now. They've built a nice high fence over there. But at the time, there was actually places you could actually drive off the road, and they go kind of across the canal that was there. There's a little canal on either side of it, and you could actually – they had – side roads where you could, you know, drive off onto people's properties out in the swamp. And that was one of these little side roads. And the guy met us up there with his swamp buggy. And we would pull the truck over, and we had to get all our stuff loaded on the swamp buggy, and he drove us back out through the swamp to this hammock where he had his cabin. And it was back there that evening, it was like a Friday night, that I was last in line for the shower, and the shower was outside, and we're on a generator out there. You know, he's got a generator, gas generator, and we're allotted so much time. We've only got so much hot water out there because that's the running off this little generator.
Right.
I'm low man on the totem pole, and that's when this thing comes across the back of that thing. After hearing the howl, I'm low, man. We're out there all waiting our turn on the back porch, which is all screened in, of course. And that's when the thing comes across the back. And I thought it was the other guy screwing with me.
Yeah? Was it?
Yeah, that's when I peep out the back. And it's pitch black out there at that point in time. You can't see, you know, anything beyond your hand in front of your face. All the light I've got is the light coming from the back porch because the shower literally sits right off the back, you know, right outside the screen there. And I can't see 2 feet barely in front of my face. I can see the silhouette of a something bipedal. You can tell from the silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
It's hairy. And, I, you know, it's not one of the guys, I can tell you that. And it goes across from, you know, we're sitting on a hammock, so which is essentially an island. There's nothing. There's no place for anybody to go out there. So, you know, it's not one of the guys walking on one end of the hammock and walking off the other.
So how tall was
it? No place for him to go, but from swamp to swamp.
Right.
You know, they're not gonna run off and run around go all the way around the hammock and come back in the other side. You know, I wouldn't want to be running around out there in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
You know, with the gators and everything else, it's not a place you want to be at night. You want to be on dry land and you want to be indoors. You can all help it.
Just the mosquitoes alone would drive a person.
Exactly.
They had
enough sense to be indoors. Let's put that way.
Yeah.
The only reason I was outside was because I was literally right outside the door and I was literally in a shower. You know? And it was after dark, and we were all waiting our turns. We were in, out, and in again.
So how long did you see it for?
It was about at least three strides. Boom, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
This thing took three strides.
Was it looking at you? Did it make eye contact with you?
It turned its head. It turned
mm-hmm.
its head. You could see. I could see enough of a head turn. I couldn't see any. I could not make out anything other than the fact that this thing turned its head. Because you can tell, you know, the head movement.
Right.
But that's all I could see was the head movement. You can't look at, I could not see its face or anything. It's pitch black out there. Just the fact the silhouette turned its head. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're looking at something, you can see a head turn.
Did it turn the head or did it turn its upper body?
Upper body.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ape.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you. I that much I can say. It's an ape.
How tall?
An ape movement. Based on the fact, looking back now, and I'm going to go by the fact that, you know, I was 14 years old. At that time, around 13, 14 years old, I was about hitting my hormones were kicking in. So. I'm about as tall as I was then. So I was right at about 5'8". At that time, 5'8", between 5'8", 5'9". So the animal was about as tall as I was, you know, at that time. I'm going to guesstimate it was my height.
Wow.
And the only reason I'm saying that because I was standing up and looking at it, the sawgrass, it was just over the sawgrass.
Did it stink?
So, oh, yeah, but everything else stunk out there, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Was it any stinkier than anything else out there? How do I tell?
Yeah.
I'm in the swamp. Everything stinks in the swamp. I'm in the shower. I stunk that night.
So did anybody else as far, I mean, naturally?
Yeah, all the guys had their heads. They heard the same howl I did.
Uh-huh.
They were all standing there with their noses pressed up against the screen trying to see out. But, you know,
uh-huh.
It's one of those shaded black screens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw something. They couldn't tell what it was. They thought it was a bear or something
mm-hmm.
running across. They saw something run across, and that's why they jumped up to run out over to look.
Wow.
And of course, they're all, I saw this, and I saw that, and nobody saw the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So did are there bear in the swamp?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I didn't.
There's everything else out here in the swamp.
Yeah.
Nothing is in the swamp these days that belongs here. You have to keep in mind, this is South Florida, even in Northern Florida, there are primates. I've been up to the Green Swamp many times, and I know you guys have talked with,
mm-hmm.
Scott, and Scott and I have been up there many times. There are things up there that don't belong there. We have hurricanes here and throughout Florida, and there are many zoos, there are primate centers, rescue centers for exotic animals. We have snakes get loose out here all the time, exotic snakes. We have primates, we have birds, you name it, all kinds of exotic animals that thrive here throughout Florida. And they don't belong here. For crying out loud, look at the iguanas.
Yeah, they're going hog wild, aren't they?
I mean, I was just down at University of Miami, and there was one that had to be at least 4.5 feet long.
Really?
Just climbing around the darn, campus. And it was an alpha male, and big orange alpha male, just sitting out there as big as he could be, just proud of himself, walking right along the edge of the road, driving down the highway there.
You better be careful. Some of those people eat them.
Yeah, I don't know if they're eating them down here or not.
Not yet.
I know an alpha male.
Take out some more. They'll be eating them.
I used to, when I worked in veterinary medicine, that's what I work with. I ran a reptile rescue program, so I can tell you, alpha male iguanas are very aggressive. And at that size, they can do some serious damage between their claws, their jaws, and their tails. They can do some very serious damage.
They can be a very unfriendly critter. I've seen them in Central America that are as long as a man's arm laying in trees. I've even had the pleasure of eating an iguana tail, which wasn't too bad.
Chicken?
Absolutely, just like chicken. Actually, I had it in a soup, and it wasn't too bad. But, yeah, they get to be some pretty big animals.
Yeah, they are. They do not make good house pets for anyone out there listening. I got news for you.
Yeah.
I had a little bitty 2.5-foot-long sucker that I was taking on a radio show. I was doing a talk, veterinary talk on them, and they had me bring animals on. Don't ask me why they wanted me to bring animals on a radio show. It really never made sense, but hey, my boss told me to take this thing on the radio show. So I did what I was told. Anyway, I was taking it with me, and I had it on a leash, and sitting on my shoulder, and as I sat there, no box to put it, nothing, just here. Take this with you as you go. Shoves it out the door. I'm holding it on my shoulder, and the thing takes a chunk out of my ear. I have to go have my ear sewn back on, and it's just a two-foot job.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm wearing it for an earring.
Yeah, I bet.
Okay, and I literally had to go have my ear sewn back on. So don't think for a minute these things are excellent pets.
Oh no, and a lot of people can get. I don't know if a lot of people, but I know that they're not recommended for children because you can get salmonella from them. And it just makes my skin crawl when you think. And I've had one that escaped, and I couldn't believe it escaped. But because my boys wanted it, but they require a lot of care. They're not an easy thing to raise.
No, they're not.
They require a great deal of care.
Very bad pets, especially for kids.
Yep.
Well, what about your adventures in the haunting world?
Haunting world.
The world of hauntings.
Lot going on there.
Tell us about your most remarkable investigation.
Investigation?
Remarkable haunting investigation.
One of the weirdest ones I had. I had one that I still haven't been able to figure out to this day. And I really would like to figure it out, but I haven't been able to figure it out. It involved an individual that's no longer here. She's passed, of course. And it was a private home, and this lady had herself had a fear of dolls. And I was getting the typical stuff you get. You get the readings. I wasn't getting anything for photographs. And the evidence just really wasn't there to support a lot of her story. And I felt bad to the lady, and I wasn't getting a whole lot. I got a few minor readings. I got a couple photographs. I got in a closet. I got some, a light where there shouldn't be any light. Some things like that. Just the typical stuff. Nothing that I considered solid anything, really. I got a couple of EVPs, but nothing really solid. Nothing I can consider anything solid. And she's bugging me, but she was so sold on the story. And then I got one piece of video that just freaked me out as I was watching it. And what freaked me out about it was I didn't get it, you know, I watched this whole video through and through, and I was just so bored. It was right toward the end. I was about to turn it off and say, well, there's just nothing here, forget it. And in the beginning, when I was interviewing her, for some reason, she had to tell me that she had a fear of dolls. Hmm. She was a little girl. And she was talking about her sister. And her sister used to tease her about dolls, with dolls. And she said she'd always had a fear of dolls ever since. And as I'm going through this video, I'm about to turn it off, and it comes up, and I'm filmed, and I had just happened to, you know, be turning around in the room, and I turn the camera as I'm turning to walk out of the room, and the camera hits the mirror. And in the mirror, over my shoulder, you know, or rather in the mirror,
uh-huh.
the reflection in the mirror, it catches the dresser. And sitting on the dresser is a porcelain doll.
And
the woman was, to this that day, so terrified of dolls that she never owned a doll.
Really?
There's a porcelain doll sitting on her dresser in the mirror.
How did she react to that? Did you ever show that to her? I would have really
yeah.
flipped her out.
Exactly. Well, that's just it. Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I that's the first thing I did, because she was close by. You've got to tell me this is your doll.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you had this doll?
Mm-hmm.
Because I went up there, and that doll's not there. And she took me into the bedroom. Look, I don't own it, see? And I said, no, you've got to show me. Where did you move this doll to? I don't own the doll.
So it was an actual physical.
She's never been there. And her husband, you know, she never owned a doll. She's terrified of those. Don't you
remember? So was it like one of those?
I listened to the tape, and yeah, I played it back and listened to the thing. I said, oh my God, yes, she sat there and was saying something about it.
So was it one of those antique kind of Victorian dolls?
It was a porcelain doll. Yeah, one of those porcelain dolls.
Wow.
With the porcelain heads and porcelain hands.
Right.
It's what it was. And that she was terrified of any dolls, but especially those things. And it was sitting there on the table. But she had lost her sister, and her sister is the one that she said she was so, that was always looking out for her. She had something that was, and she felt like her sister was always there watching over her, trying to protect her from something.
Maybe she was.
Well, then I got some strange, it was really weird. And when I got the EVPs, there was a male voice on there that was kind of harsh, and then there was a female voice on there that was kind of protective.
Hmm.
And she'd always felt this presence.
So was this reflection a solid reflection? It wasn't even, you know, misty or anything. It was just it looked like there was actually.
It looked like it was sitting there. It looked like it was sitting there.
Huh.
On the dresser, the doll looked like it was actually sitting physically on the dresser.
And you don't recall seeing one aside
no.
reflection?
Hmm. No, I did. You know, and I went around the room. No, I never, to be honest with you, I've been in that house I don't know how many times.
Was it an older house, Ed?
No. It actually was a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been in this woman's home I don't know how many times. And I had never seen that doll in there. I could never recall seeing that doll in there.
Hmm.
Never. Never once. Could I, for the life of me, recall seeing it?
What was she
that's
experiencing
really
in the house?
Me, and that's another thing that threw me off. What's that?
What was she experiencing in the house? Was she experiencing...
Shadow figures. She had
uh-huh.
the one thing, it was shadow figures. And these shadow figures had been bothering her for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very curious about it and very hesitant about it. And myself, and there was just nothing there. I more so was doing it, I think, to find, you know, it just peace of mind for her
mm-hmm.
at that point. And I did just don't really, to this day, have an explanation. That's the only thing I think I don't have an explanation for. Well, there's one other thing I don't have an explanation for, would like to have, but that was some personal
But you know,
but
you know, it just seems
I
like
I really don't have an explanation for it.
if it's going to happen, it seems like it would happen that way, though, you know, because that would just be the nature of the phenomena, where it would be very brief and it would be something that we, you know, that you could relate to like that, that you would instantly know that that's a pretty strong indicator or something, you know.
Yeah.
Not having seen the picture, if it's as, it was as clear and it was, you know, as lucid as that, and it was like a doll, that's pretty significant, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. But then again, I cannot say that that doll was not placed there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And removed.
Mm-hmm. You never
because,
know. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's the one element.
Yeah.
That I can't account for.
But she refuted
it. That doll. Exactly. That is the one element. You know, I know the person, and I knew the person very well, enough to say that, no, she did not. But then again, that's not the scientific method. It's not, you know,
yeah,
that's not
true. You don't know.
And therefore, I have to hold myself to my own standards.
Yep.
You know, and because of that, there is the element of doubt. And I have to be held accountable to my own standards.
Yep.
Yeah, it's not
pick and choose, you know, who you want to believe in.
But nonetheless, if it was a fraud, it was a clever one, because that's pretty interesting stuff.
I wouldn't say it was a clever fraud. I think it was a very simple fraud to perpetrate. You know, she was going to do it.
Yeah.
Wait till I left the room and moved the doll and stick it in a closet somewhere.
Yeah, but I mean, just the way it was portrayed to you, that she had a fear of dolls and her sister was around, and her sister obviously used to chase with the dolls. So that would immediately be significant to you, as the researcher. That's all I was. That's how.
Oh,
I,
yeah, yeah. As far as the mind game goes.
Right. It's, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I meant. I mean, there's nothing clever about baiting and switching, but to set you up in such a way as that would not be your expectation, and then all of a sudden to have it be there is really interesting.
Yeah, but. You know, people do it all the time. Most of the time, we call them psychics.
so you're not real keen on psychics.
Well, not necessarily all psychics, but there's certain types. I mean, for instance, down here we've got Miss Cleo, who's still selling used cars for Uncle Mel.
Miss Cleo.
Yeah. So I mean,
you
have to pick and choose your psychic.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, you know, you're not going to, I think it's pretty safe to say you're not going to get a reliable psychic on an 800 line. I'd be kind of skeptical about that.
That's
any prognostication from an 800 line, I'd be worried about.
800 line, hell, it's probably a 900 line.
Yeah,
all
there
right.
You go.
Yeah. All right, so in your travels, in your research, What are some of the things, or if anything, that you've been able to hypothesize or come up with some kind of a speculation on what might be going on in any of them? I mean, you can choose from hauntings, ufology, cryptozoology, parapsychology, whichever you prefer. Is there anything that, from the years of your research, that you gained a better understanding in some particular area?
Well, I think, the vast majority, let's start with the UFOs. Ufology, I think, vast majority, and I'm going to say the largest majority, are ours, are man-made. They are just what, you know, most people
sure.
think they are. They're earthly technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a given. And that there is the next percentage is going to be just what they say they are, and that is misidentified natural phenomena. There is a teeny tiny percent that remains unaccounted for.
Sure.
So essentially what we have been told is the truth, that there is a small percentage that is unaccounted for. There is a large percentage that is top secret earthly phenomenon, and that there is another percentage that is natural phenomena. What we have been told is the truth.
Do you think, Ed, that some of those, I'm really interested in the triangular craft. Do you think that the government has perfected some sort of lifting body technology, electromagnetic drive sort of system or something that it's almost like those are big reconnaissance craft. What's your spin on that?
Yes, they've had electromagnetic technologies. I mean, anti-gravity technologies for years, for crying out loud. Ever since, you've got to go way back. If you start looking into the works of sitting way back since the Project Paperclip, even further back than that, you can go all the way back to World War II and the unified field theory with
Tesla.
Tesla and Einstein and so forth.
So you think that we've been
coming up with his theory of relativity. He was just starting to come up with that, crying out loud, and he's starting to work on a unified field theory that was already starting to put into application anti-gravity and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that's where the whole concept of this Philadelphia experiment and the Nazi Bell and so forth all were derived from. So, yeah, they've been working on anti-gravity for God knows how long. And it's been around, and there is a gentleman, and I'm trying to think of his name. God forgive me. I've even interviewed him. I've talked to him many times. He's worked on, he built. He worked on the anti-gravity. Joe Farrell introduced me to him, and I'm trying to think. Oh, God, I can't think of his name now. Actually built one in his garage.
Mm-hmm.
He's anti-electromagnets and built an anti-gravity lifter in his garage, for crying out loud. And it works. It'll come to me sometime here shortly. But I know that the technology exists. We have it. And the government, I'm sure, if someone can build in their garage that it exists, it's there. Tim Ventura, that's it. Tim Ventura, American Anti-Gravity.
Well, American Tim Ventura, yeah. We've invited him to come on the show a number of times, and he never even responds to us. He's done that some electromagnetic stuff. But
yeah,
I've always been, and I'm not disagreeing with you, I'm not so, I don't know. I'm not of the persuasion to think that the government wouldn't hide things from us, but that kind of, that level of sophisticated technology,
That's just it. It's not that sophisticated. Tesla has had it.
Well, I mean, wrapping the engineering around it, for interstellar flight or if you're just going to bounce around and you're going to have surveillance craft, it would probably work. But I mean, if I'm thinking in terms of like interstellar,
Oh, well, then you're going to have, not in terms of something interstellar. You have to remember the human body is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the flight and the technology is not the problem.
If you have the ability to control magnetic fields and the inertia inside whatever vehicle you're traveling
that's where you're running, that's your problem.
Then it's not a problem. Then it's not going to be
right,
a problem.
Right, that's where you're running into your problem. Is you may be able to control the magnetic field, but the inertia is where you're going to run into problem, is because of the human body and the human body's limitations.
Oh, absolutely. Our fighter pilots are already experiencing that. They black out
with
regularity.
And if we can't overcome that in our own planes, our aircraft within the Earth's atmosphere, we're not going to be able to overcome it.
Well, obviously, whoever's piloting some of the more interesting unidentified flying objects that can make 90-degree turns at 5,000 miles an hour has obviously got that down pat.
That's the problem I have with it. It just, whatever they're doing, if they're able to, these craft are able to do that, they're defying some serious laws of physics.
Depends on if they've created an envelope or anything. There's a couple of questions in chat that I'll throw at you. You've probably seen them. Sharon wants to know, if you have any thoughts on holograms or the government producing holograms of UFOs, such as from Bluebeam, Project Bluebeam?
It's a possibility. I'm not really sure why they would want to do that. I mean, anything like that is possible. The big question is why? Why would they want to do something like that?
One of the theories that used to be kicked around about that, and Jacques Vallée talks about them doing projections too, but one of the theories that was kicked around, and I don't know if this directly relates to Sharon's question, but one of the things that was kicked around for years and years was in the conspiracy theory ring was that there'd be events that the oligarchy wanted to keep in place. And one of the things that they would do was first say that the homeland was under the threat of attack by terrorists. That would be stage one. And then the second stage was, when that started wearing thin, would be that we were going to be attacked by aliens. And so there were some people that postulated that if we could project things. Let me ask you, Ed, are you familiar, and maybe our audience is familiar too, with Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke, where one day everybody wakes up and there's a UFO over every capital in the world? And,
yes.
You know, they're holographic projections. So you could manipulate a population with holographic, whether it's...
They're going with that whole V mentality where you get the populace so worked up over... Right, you're keeping them all worked up. That's going with this whole Illuminati concept and this whole
reptilian,
they're out to get us, something mentality.
Not necessarily.
Conspiracy
think of it in terms
type of
thing. Well, just think of it in terms of if you could create with computer-generated graphics nowadays, it's hard to differentiate what may be
You create the threat. Okay, here's that mentality. You create the threat, all right? You create an illusionary threat. You create a non-real threat, okay, an invisible. And you make the populace fear it. Then you step in as the savior, and you keep people believing there's an enemy out there so that you can keep the populace in fear of the enemy.
Under
while
control.
You control.
Right.
Control is the issue.
Exactly.
Lord knows we've never had anything like that happen here in this country. What alert are we at now, Orn?
Yeah. But see, here's my point. Why would they need the UFOs when we have
religion?
Al-Qaeda. We have religion. There are too many real, you know, there are too many other realistic things planet. Worry about creating
that's
more than
let me ask you this. If they projected an image of Jesus Christ, a three-dimensional image of Jesus Christ, do you think some people might think it was a rapture, the second coming?
Sure, but why? Why do that when the reality here on this planet is far more, you know, terrifying? There's enough things right here on this planet to terrify us. You know, with threats of bird flu and other crap. I mean, why get so far-fetched when the realities here are so terrifying?
I think that's what Bluebeam was projected, that what it was about, was that
yeah.
it would manipulate the population by, you know, showing them things that...
Bring it back down to the real world. I mean, the real world is so much more terrifying than what's out there anyway.
Yeah, well,
you
don't need holograms when you can see the Virgin Mary on the side of a Burger King.
We gotta get down to reality.
All right, well, let's talk about, maybe this is not down to reality, but there was a question in the chat about wanting to know your thoughts. Was that from Don? Wanting to know your thoughts about the Philadelphia experiment.
Philadelphia experiment. Interesting experiment. I think that there's some reality to it. Of course, some of the key players turned out to be completely bogus, much like Bob Lazar and his little...
Biente? Is that
yeah, Caliente or whatever his name was. Another Ed.
Carlos Allende.
Yeah.
Allende, yeah. However you say it. Allende?
Allende.
Allende. Some funky name.
God grant.
At least he can pronounce it. Hey, I suck at
names.
So don't ask me how to pronounce it. But he had the concept and the theory behind it, I think, is a very valid one. And that goes back to what we were just talking about with this unified field and so forth. Some of the theories behind the Philadelphia experiment, I think, very realistic.
And I wouldn't put it past the Navy to have tried experiments to that effect, to be honest. I think it's one of those things where we have some real, as with all legends and myths, they are based in fact somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did.
At some point. So there was something done. The ship, the Eldridge, did exist. We know this to be a fact. The question is, how far-fetched was Allende, or whatever his face's story is? I think he was just a bogus player in the thing, or maybe had some limited knowledge and he blew it all out of proportion. But there is some legitimacy to the experiment. It did exist. How far-fetched is another story. I think
they all had, the destroyer escorts all had degaussing mechanisms on board.
Exactly.
And I think that that's probably where the root of that story is that, you know, maybe some sailors went off, you know, ship sometime and started telling tales out of school about the, you know, nature of that degaussing equipment, which is basically used to detect and repel mines. And almost all of them had it, but, you know,
I don't know if it was so much
story.
I think a lot of it had to do, like you said, the degaussing, I think, was mm-hmm. more of what it was. And mm-hmm. I think that, to some extent, it was a basic, not just the degaussing, but I think it also was limited, or basic. If you look back at the Horton flying wing, which was under development at the time on the Nazi and that whole shebang, they were also working. The Horton flying wing, Horton Brothers flying wing, actually had limited stealth capability at that point in time. Most people aren't aware, but it actually had limited stealth capability. That is the same thing that our stealth bombers and fighters have now.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So it wouldn't surprise me if they were trying out some stealth capabilities on that thing as well. But the extent of what they were doing, you know, between the degaussing and trying, because we have stealth boats and stealth ships now. So were they trying a combination of the two? Were they, you know, doing this, that, and the other? Yes, I'm sure they were doing all kinds of mixing and matching and playing around with this thing. But I don't think they had people melding into ships and this thing phasing in. No, I think somebody got a hold of a little bit of what these experiments were about, took it and blew it way out of proportion, and the next thing you know, people are projecting Jesus into the sky, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's what happens with a lot of these. And that also is a part of what most people call disinformation as well. You've got mm-hmm. to throw some of that in there.
Of course. And the UFO community has been, you know, targeted for years and years and years and infiltrated, and it's really hard, you know, kind of separating the wheat from the chaff when it comes to what information is real. But, you know, like the true art of disinformation, I'm sure you'll agree with me, Ed, is having little seeds of the truth in there from time to time, which make it tantalizing and then make the whole thing more plausible.
Well, yeah, but that's also what, you know, myth and legend is made out of. That is
absolutely, absolutely.
So you've got, but that's where the research comes in. That's where, and that's also where common sense, the application of science and education comes in. We've got to educate ourselves. We have to do some hard research, and you have to have a little common sense and know where to draw the line. You know, when people start saying, "All right, I want to believe that it is possible to travel to planet Alpha Centauri, all right, and for them to come here, but I also want to believe that aliens are abducting people. You know, they're coming here, they're abducting people, but their intentions are to help us out."
Is that what you're...
No, I'm saying...
Right,
speculation. Speculation, right. People
Good.
Will say, I know people that will say, oh, I believe that aliens are coming here and they want to help us. But these are the same exact individuals that are on the other hand saying, and they also are abducting human beings and doing experiments on us. Well, now, make up your mind, people. They're either here to help us or they're here to probe us up the rectum. Make up your mind. Which
Thank
is
you, Whitley.
You know?
So what do you think about the alien abduction phenomenon?
I haven't seen, there are two different things going on here. You got two different side stories. As far as I'm concerned, based on experiments like people like Persinger, who are working with the frontal lobes of the brain in the EMF bombardment,
mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of research that seems to fit this bedroom abduction scenario where people are actually not seeing UFOs and they're having these abductions in their sleep and things.
How would you account for the bombardment? If that's happening in their homes and they're asleep, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, Ed. How would you account for the magnetic bombardment that they get in the lab under the helmet?
Well,
where would it originate from?
I was going to get to that. Persinger has done follow-up experiments with that. So have others, Fox and so forth, in the UK, in which they've done haunted rooms. They've also done this with experiments in haunting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A young girl, for instance, who had a head injury, and they took her, put her in a laboratory setting, brought her bedroom and some of the items and so forth, her bed. She claimed she was having was being visited by, the Holy Ghost, and she was being sexually molested at night, and this little creature was sitting on her shoulder. And it turns out that her alarm clock was just a few feet away from her head at night, and they checked that thing, and that was what was causing it. It was putting out EMF. At a level that was significant enough to cause
for her anyway.
For her, yes, and they measured it. And once they removed that element, occurrences of those events stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the only thing. They put it back, and it would reoccur. That was the only thing. They were taking different objects out and measuring.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's true with digital clocks too. That digital clocks crank out a lot of EMF.
But that's. They were able to verify it and check it, and that was what was causing it in that case. And then they did an experiment in which they put people in an actual haunted room. They bombarded them. They built this room, and they had gotten volunteers together, and they bombarded them with EMF signals. They put EMF devices in the walls, and they also did a low ultrasound.
Low frequency. Mm-hmm.
Right. And they stuck them in the walls and did similar experiments and got similar results. Now, this is what's causing that type of phenomenon. It seems to center around the temporal lobe of the brain. Now, there's the other type of phenomenon, of which I know of two cases that I do think leave doubts as to... they don't seem to fit that bill.
Mm-hmm.
And EMF does not explain them away. And, of course, that's Travis Walton's case and Betty and Barney Hill's case. You cannot explain away an alien abduction case with witnesses, okay,
mm-hmm.
such as Travis Walton's. When you've got eyewitnesses saying, poof, he's sucked up in a beam, there goes Travis, and then Travis disappears, and you've got people taking polygraph tests, being accused of doing this guy in the woods, and then days later the guy shows up, and here he is telling his account of what happened. And
several days later.
And all these guys are passing polygraphs in the meantime to try to save their butts and keep themselves out of jail and so forth.
Yeah, well, they actually thought they'd done them harm.
Betty and Barney Hill, who are interracial activists at a time when that's something that is very risky and mm-hmm. an era where interracial activism is not widely accepted. They're upstanding members of their community, and they don't want to risk their status as being UFO nuts. And Betty Hill comes back with a star map that is verified, years later, and she has no knowledge of astronomy, much less to be able to put together that map, and it's something that's identified, later on by astronomers, something she wouldn't have had any knowledge of. It took many people a long time to come up with, a match for that star map.
So
I mean, that's a stretch right there. That in and of itself is quite an accomplishment.
So to sum it up, what you're saying is that there are some cases which appear to be true, but there's a lot which can be explained with by other means as well.
Exactly, but there's only those two. There's two cases that stand out and cannot be explained. Very much like the overall scenario that we have of UFOs, where the vast majority can be explained as either our craft or unexplained natural phenomenon, then we have that small percentage that cannot be explained. Same thing with this abduction scenario. Vast majority can be explained. It's that small and it's that small percentage that I am concerned with as a researcher. I want to know what that small, teeny tiny percentage. Mm-hmm.
Which cases in ufology do you find the most plausible and the most fascinating? Can you name two cases that come to mind that you right off the bat that you really think are remarkable?
Delphos, Kansas is one.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Delphos, Kansas landing. That one right there, we got a physical trace case.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that's one reason I really like that one. Then the other case that I do find interesting, and because it's another physical trace case, and also because it has a it was in Project Blue Book, and I'm trying to think. The Lonnie Zamora case. Because it also has a
police officer.
Right. And that's because it was in Project Blue Book, but also because it was one of the cases that they couldn't explain away.
Right.
Actually, they tried to explain away, but because the top dog come back later and said, well, I really have to go along with the fact that it's not, you know, we can't really blow this one off.
Yeah. And he was a reputable police officer, so that made it that much more difficult. He was somebody that was supposed to be trained.
You got a physical, you know, this is a physical trace case here, especially with this Delphos case.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and this is one that J. Allen Hynek, you know, had a hand in.
Right, and they've done all kinds of soil analysis, and soil analysis has been wacky, and you know, it's really...
To this day, the soil still... floats.
Right. And what's
and it
really
still exists.
What's really
soil samples
interesting
still
about that case. What I find really interesting about that case that is the fact that it got so little attention.
Mm-hmm. Very little. It's just now that people are finally still going back and it's like, well, wait a minute, you've got one of the best cases. 1971 in Kansas, UFO leaves this ring. It affects the woman, you know, the woman touches the ring and her hands are numb. And the ring is phosphorescent for a while. You know, it changes the color. Now stuff won't grow there. The soil floats. I mean, there's evidence that something occurred there that wasn't natural. That's one of the best physical trace cases. We've got something
object,
we can actually...
The object was observed for quite a while, too.
Yeah. Very. What was it like? I think the witnesses, it was about 75 feet away when... Ron Johnson saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I think, 17, what was he, 16 or 17 years
so
old
was,
at the time.
He was a young boy, yep.
He was about 16 at the
time. It was there long enough so he could get the rest of his family to see it. I remember that.
Yeah, and it stayed for quite a while. Very late. It did make a noise, too, which was unusual for these things. Because a lot of times these objects are sitting there, sometimes they'll make a low hum, but sometimes they'll be completely void of sound. But this one, he said, made sort of a washing machine sound.
Well, here's a question from the chat room. Is there a reason why UFOs are seen in particular areas on Earth more than other areas?
I don't know that really holds true. I think that they seem to... some areas... are just more populated. If you look at a map of overall sightings, I think it has to do more with where the more massive human beings are. In other words, there are more reports where there are more people to see them. They will correlate. In other words, if there's a population of 10,000 people, there's going to be a higher number of sightings where there are more people to see them. The less populated areas, you're going to have fewer reports because there's fewer people to see them.
Makes sense.
All right. I really don't think that you can go by, any reports like that. There may be Joe Blow in one town, and he may be the one of only person in that area that he may see, UFOs on a daily basis, and only make a report once a year. Because he don't want to be the only nut out there seeing UFOs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But you may have one person in a town of 10,000, and all 10,000 of those people may make a report in one day.
Right.
So it looks like you've got a lot of UFO reports in one area, whereas this guy's seeing them, one a day for, a year.
Hey Ed, what's your take on MJ-12?
Original reports, I have to say, some of those documents seem to hold more water, definitely do seem to hold water, because they can be verified if you cross-reference them to other documents, such as date books and things like that, and other archives. If you actually go to the archives and look at some of the other documents through Freedom of Information and so forth. However, after the original documents, they start getting really bogus. They get into other crap that just doesn't match up, and they don't cross-reference against other Freedom of Information Act documents, date books, appointment books, things like that. They don't cross-reference.
Mm-hmm.
So, bogus. I think that if you look at the original release documents from Shendera and Friedman, you'll see that some of those original documents do seem to have some support against other documents. But after that, they start breaking down. And the stuff that's coming out now is complete, I'll just be honest with you, it's total bogus crap.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe any of it. People are Xeroxing, faxing. Ever since they got their hands on the first ones came out, people realized they could cut, paste, copy, and
mm-hmm.
fax stuff, that they went nuts.
Everybody
wants
else.
To be the next one to fake something, so now fakes are right and left. Everybody's trying to be the next bogus fake this or fake that. I'm waiting for somebody to try to land a UFO on the White House lawn and claim it's real next. See if they could sell it for $250,000.
Yeah.
Fielded that one so well. How about this one? What do you think about Billy Meyer?
He's terrible.
I've spoken of his American representative many times. He's a nice gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Very well spoken, good-hearted mm-hmm. fellow.
We've had him on the show.
Very nice people. Yeah, very nice people.
Michael Horn.
Mike's a good fella.
Mm-hmm.
Love him to death. Very nice fella.
Eloquent speaker.
Very eloquent. And they're good-hearted. I think they have the best intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Michael's good. They're a good-hearted man.
Mm-hmm.
However, I have to be honest, I've seen...
No, please lie to us.
Billy himself is slipping in his old age. Let me just put it that way. He's not aging gracefully. His pictures are slipping.
Yeah.
his talents are getting less and less. He's losing his quality of photograph.
Hmm.
I had Dr. Masaki Hatsumi, the 34th Grandmaster in Ninjutsu. He did a photo swinging a Sarigama. It's a chained weapon. All right, overhead. And the ninja used to take these chained weapons. They would put a light on the end of it. They just light. It's got a weighted chain. It's a chain with a weight on the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
They'd swing it out against their opponent in the dark, and they would put a fire on the end, light the end of the chain, so when they swung it, it would blind the opponent before it hit him in the head. So they didn't see it coming. Well, if you swing it out in pitch blackness like that, it makes this nice, neat little ring. If you photograph it, it makes this nice, neat little ring. It looks like laser beam, a circular laser beam going around your head, or one of those light rings you would see at a carnival. You know how the kids mm-hmm. wear these glow-in-the-dark mm-hmm. rings around their neck? That's what it looks like. But, you know, imagine that stretched out at a big, huge circle around an individual. And that's what this thing, Hatsumi's, got swung around him. And I saw this photograph of him. I just wouldn't draw all my old books. And oh, wow. And I thought, I'm going to copy this picture. I want a picture of Hatsumi, you know, in the olden days. And I was going to put that up on a website. And I thought, wait a minute, I've seen that picture somewhere before. And I went through one of the books that Michael had sent me from the retreat there in Billy's retreat in Switzerland. And I opened it up, and sure enough, it's Billy Myers standing in the middle of a field with that same light ring around him.
Mm.
And he calls it the Eye of God. And the alien beings, these Palladians, had put this Eye of God around him. And I looked at the picture of Dr. Hatsumi, and I looked at the picture of Billy Myers with this light beam around him. And I thought, holy crap. And I looked real close, and I saw Billy Myers' hand up in the air. And I looked at Dr. Hatsumi, and I saw his hand up in the air. And it wasn't rocket science to figure out, you know, I was looking at the exact same picture.
Ethel, we have a match.
You know, it didn't take long to figure out how he had done that. So I started flipping through this book. And I start to look, and, oh, here's the UFO. And it's, you know, this one's a little disproportionate all of a sudden. And it's not the same quality of picture as the, you know, the really good ones that made Billy famous. I'm looking at models that are plastic, and now all of a sudden they're just spray-painted gold. And I look over, and there's a little car underneath it. But somebody forgot to paint the windows on the car because the plastic model has white windows. The windows aren't clear, are punched out. Somebody forgot to take the windows out, and then the windows are white.
Hmm.
Because they forgot to take the plastic out of the windows.
Interesting.
Now, well, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think you nailed it.
It's not brain surgery. It's not rocket science here, folks.
Really?
And, you know, I've seen people actually take some of his other pictures and put them on, you know, green screen and stuff and do all of it. But you don't have to do that anymore because he slipped to the point where he's forgetting to punch out plastic.
Yeah. Well, listen, we'd asked you about an hour, and we're over that. But are you good for just a few more minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. There's a question from Don in the chat about USOs. What's your thoughts on USOs under, what is it, unidentified submerged objects?
Unidentified submersible objects or underwater
USOs.
That kind of came about originally. If I'm not mistaken, there were two. One off of Puget Sound, I think, was one of the first ones, if I'm not mistaken. I know there's a bunch, and there's an active base. This is
Shag Harbor, too, maybe.
Shag Harbor. Shag Harbor's another one. And then there's. One of the ones that really got crosses over into another area is off the coast of Puerto Rico, too. And that crosses into the area where we see the chupacabra come into play.
The infamous chupacabra.
Right, El Chupacabra. But the one, Shag Harbor is one where it's actually two at Shag Harbor. That you're talking about, and that one object essentially came in, car apparently crashed, essentially went down, stayed under the water for a while, and it seemed like another one came down and rescued or repaired or did its thing, and they stayed down there for a while. It was an extremely deep part of the water, but the Navy came out. Fishermen, I believe it was, saw. The naval ships out there.
Mm-hmm. For what, a week?
It went down, yeah, it was like a week or 3 days to a week. And they went out and supposedly sent divers or sent a sub or divers and did some tests, tried to find out what this object was. Nobody got anything off of it. I found, supposedly they had no information on it. But the object, another object comes in, and this object takes off with the other object. Moves off with the other, and then nobody has any information on this thing. This thing comes and goes. The Navy's out there trying to collect information on it, trying to collect the object, do something with it, and then this thing goes. It goes just like it came.
Yeah,
and the Navy got involved with it, but the Navy, you know, denies being out there.
Mm-hmm.
Fishermen remember seeing it. Know the Navy was out there. And it's another one of those situations where we weren't there.
Right.
You didn't see us. Well, the Navy, the U.S. military used its Jedi mind trick, and hey, we are not here. We are not the military you're looking for.
Well, let me ask you this.
You don't need to see his ID.
Yeah. You don't need to see the military.
What do you think? What do you think about the future of the paranormal field? Excuse me, the anomalous field. And just trying to placate you here. Where do you think this field is going here? What are your insights for the future?
I think the field is going to hell in a handbasket if we don't start getting some education involved. To be honest with you, some serious education.
Praise your brother. We're not worthy.
I think we need some real effort in education and less effort in entertainment.
Amen to that.
I'm just going to be honest with you.
Yes, preach it, brother.
Entertainment is one thing, and if that's all you want, turn on your TV sets. If you want thrill-seeking, go to a theme park.
Yeah.
If you want entertainment, turn on your TV. If you want to get answers, pick up a book, go study, and educate yourself. Otherwise, get the hell out of the field. You don't belong here.
Yeah, I think
without
that
answers
was,
and research, entertainment is for television. Thrill seeking is for theme parks.
And one thing that people need to understand is that what you see on TV is not consistent with research in the paranormal field. That's television. That's one thing. This is another thing.
Entirely different.
Yeah, we don't drive around in great big, what are they? Chevy Suburbans, yeah. And I'm not bad mouthing Taps, but I mean, you know, it's just it's a lot different in the real
television.
World.
It's entertainment. Gotcha.
I think John's sitting here in the chat room. She makes a great point too. It seems like students without teachers. I have to agree.
Well, that's a good point. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, and that's what's drawn them. I mean, obviously, it's the familiarity, the TV, is drawing a lot of people to the field. But a lot of people are coming to the field, and they don't know that they don't know anything. They think that it's what they see on TV. It's all about thrill seeking. It's not about serious research. So I appreciate and agree with that. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I'm going to put a plug in here for Paranexus. It's one of the reasons why Paranexus exists. Is for education, and we're continuing to try to push that more and more. We have the Paranexus Academy. We're trying to add courses to it. We're looking for competent instructors who want to teach. It's all about education, and it's about all of us putting ourselves together, our brains together, our ideas together, seeing what we can come up with so that we can make some headway. Because one thing that kills me, Ed, is that over the last few decades, we've made precious little advancement in really understanding, you know, what we need to understand.
Well, I get so tired, you know, I can't preach it enough. I get so sick and tired of listening to people, you know, holler and hoot and complain about, I saw it on television. Well, don't turn off your television, pick up a book.
Yeah.
You know, we have libraries still. And, you know, turn off your internet. Stop armchair researching. Okay, you can't research sitting at the internet. If you pick up a book, if you go to a library, you know, they have things called microfiches. they have, books actually have things called footnotes. Footnotes have, you know, they have references.
Mm-hmm.
You can take the footnotes, you can cross-reference. Wow. There's such a thing as called cross-referencing. You can verify your sources.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you pick up an internet, people look at that web page and they go, oh, it's a fact. I read it on the internet on this website.
Oh, yeah. It's gospel. It's written in stone.
I'm going to hell if I don't believe that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know what's even scarier, too, though, Ed, is the fact that, like, you know, the statement about the students without any teachers is the fact that, you know, some people, I think, just watch the shows on TV, and some of them are better than others. I mean, I give a lot of credit to TAPS for utilizing the scientific approach, but you know what? Just because you watch so many episodes doesn't mean that you're at the same expertise level as those folks or other people that have been doing it, and you really don't have any business, like you said, running around out there with an EMF meter that doesn't even have batteries in it, or whatever.
I'll take a step back from that. Where's the scientific approach if you're not using the scientific method? The scientific
Absolutely.
Method calls for sending things out to outside laboratories.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where's the outside laboratories?
Yeah.
Where's the outside sources? Where's the peer review?
Yeah.
That's part of the scientific process and the scientific method. See, people aren't even using the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
No.
They don't even understand the scientific method and the scientific process or peer review.
That's right.
And that's not even being taught in this field.
And you're right. We're trying to do that here. And you know what? We've always encouraged the peer review. Matter of fact, one of the things that we've hoped to accomplish on Paranexus is for folks to feel comfortable submitting what they think is relevant evidence. And you know what? You know, we get a smattering here or there, but you know, that's part of it, and you're absolutely correct. You know, you should not be afraid to submit your data to any group that's going to be willing to take a look at it. That's done every day in traditional academic research.
And peer review is not an easy process. It's
no.
not easy to sit there and have your work criticized.
No, yep. It's not.
But it is a respectable thing to do because you have, as a researcher, you have to be willing to take the hits for the cause.
You need to be able to back it up. You know,
right.
You need to be able to back up your hypotheses.
Exactly. And you've got to be willing to also take the hits for the cause. In other words, if you're willing to say that I'm comfortable in my research, I know I've done the work correctly, and if someone finds fault with it and you're able to look at it and say, oh, crap, I missed that one,
mm-hmm.
then you take the hit because you know, hey,
and you're better for it.
There's a point, right? It's going to make the work better. It's going to make me better as a researcher, and that's what the scientific method is all about.
And it's all about setting up the constructs of the experiment. You know, if you don't do that right, then you're wrong from the beginning. And you've got to do it, and you got to do it right. And you know, and what you also talk about is methodology. Even if it's a very simplistic methodology, if you stray from that methodology, then you're going to have a hard time proving it to anybody in a peer review, or it's going to become evident, very self-evident, that you didn't follow your own methodology. And, I mean, that's like the kiss of death.
Well, someone I was reading somewhere where someone had actually said this, that, you know, you have to pick a side. You can't pick religion or science. I mean, you can't pick half and half, you know, spirituality or science. And science, you have to pick one side or the other. You can't pick middle of the road.
That's true.
And you've got to pick a side. But in the same voice, later on, that same individual goes on to describe himself as saying, but science is imperfect.
Right.
And, you know, and they're claiming to be a scientist is what they're trying to do, but they say, but science is imperfect. And you can't, you know, so, you know, you can't believe in science. And so I thought, well, that's the most contradictory damn thing I ever heard. But I got to thinking, well, yes, that's true. Science is imperfect, but that's why we have the scientific method, because it allows for its own imperfections.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it perfect.
Well, it acknowledges
it. It allows for self-correction.
That's right. Whereas that's what differentiates it from religion, because religion is based totally on faith.
Right, exactly. Faith is blind.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require proof.
Mm-hmm.
faith is
and how
not
many times have you come across people who are absolute believers that what they've caught, what they've got captured on camera are orbs? You know, I mean, and
oh, don't
you know,
get me started. Don't get me started.
Yeah,
on
oh,
Liz
I knew
Blair.
That. Yeah, because
Liz
you know,
Blair's. Oh my God!
And
now,
goes,
I know
well,
you've heard.
I do. We've got people that have just been absolutely irate with us because we.
Well, I know you've heard Bruce.
No,
I've talked to Bruce many times. Bruce McAbee.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever gotten to talk with Bruce?
Yeah. No, we haven't. Before. We'd like to get him on the show, though.
Oh, Bruce, you'll love him. He's actually an optical physicist.
Right.
Works for the Navy. And Stan and I were talking one day with him, and he's Bruce is an optical physicist in the Navy, and one of the biggest things that he always complains about is lens flares when people take mm-hmm. pictures of UFOs. Well, a lens flare is an orb,
mm-hmm.
and people, you know, when they see them in ghost photographs, they call them orbs,
right?
But they're lens flares, and this guy is an optical physicist for the Navy, and he sees them on a regular basis, and he'll tell you right off the bat, that's what they are lens flares. Occasionally, you know, when you've got multiple jobs, you know, you see them all over the place, humidity can account for some of them, but they're still lens flares. He said that lens flares can be caused by moisture. But 9 times out of 10, you know, it's caused by lens flare, you know, lighting.
Well, let's talk about peer review. Just I wanted to get a comment on that because I don't want to let it go too far. But I, you know, that's the reason that Paranexus has a journal is to try to get people to submit articles and papers and things that they want to publish. And, you know, I'll be damned if we can get anything submitted. So this is a call out to the public. If you've got some thoughts, back them up, write a paper, submit it. Right now the journal's quarterly, you know, because we've got to find quality stuff to put in it, and we're looking for quality stuff. And so go to paranexus.org and look at it and submit a paper. And I'm glad to hear you know, some of your thoughts on the old orb thing. And I just want to put this out there, too. I want to believe, too, but I am not going to believe on faith. I don't do faith in this regard anymore. You know, I want to believe, too, but the facts of the matter, the preponderance of evidence is pretty clear that orbs, the orb phenomena, is a naturally caused phenomena. And even if we're completely wrong and it, and some of them are spirits or something else, there is absolutely no way currently to prove that. And so we let it go. We don't even deal with it. It's a moot point.
Thank you.
You know?
And what you're saying, that preponderance of evidence, let me phrase something. You bring up a point with that, and I do want to say this. If we were to look at this and evaluate any of these phenomena, okay, if we look at the numinous phenomenon as a whole, and we were to take it and present it in a court of law, we could look at it in two ways. We could take it from the spiritual perspective or the scientific perspective. All right, let's break it down because let's face it, that's the way that this field is looked at from either perspective.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's look at it from that perspective. We look at it from the spiritual perspective, we would be in a civil court of law.
Mm-hmm.
Because all that is required in a civil court of law is beyond a reasonable doubt in order to mm-hmm. win your case. And that would be faith.
Right.
All right? In order for science to win its case, it would be criminal law, which is beyond a preponderance of the evidence. Okay? So in this field, the spiritual side of the field, all that's required is beyond a reasonable doubt. But for the scientist side of the field, it must be proved beyond a reason. I mean, beyond a preponderance of the evidence.
Right, the preponderance of the evidence, yeah, preponderance of evidence needs
that
to
is
something.
Just to simplify it for most listeners out there, I know a lot of times we talk so in such terms that a lot of times people can't really comprehend one way or the other. I think that's the simplest way to put it for most people in terms of courts of law, is that the spiritual side of things are very, because they get them mixed up a lot of times. Let's take it out of the spiritual realm of the scientific realm, put it in the legal realm, because that's something everybody can understand. You want to break it down to brass tacks, look at it from a civil and a criminal court of law point of view. And that's the easiest way to look at it. The civil point of view is the spiritualist point of view.
Mm-hmm.
The scientific point of view is the criminal point of view. Because one is going to be more serious than the other in terms of the final outcome. So it requires more definitive proof than the other.
Right. And we need definitive proof because, you know, as I've been talking about for a bit here, all we get is teasers. You know, we get a light up in the night sky doing all kind of erratic movements, but we can't really see what it is. We get a silver object way up in the daytime sky. We can't really see what it is. We get these haunting reports. We get little things happen. They're all teasers. I'm tired of teasers. I'm tired of the glimpse. I want to see and document what's going on here. And in order to achieve that, we have to think fresh. We have to think differently. We have to approach this seriously and professionally. And we have to combine our efforts. We got to leave the egos at the door. We need to get together as a community on this. And there's so much bullshit, petty fighting going on, and it happens in a number of human organizations and fields, I know, but in the paranormal field, it's got to stop this petty ego crap. We are not competitors; we are colleagues. And I've been preaching this and preaching it and beating the heck out of it. And it's got to be said: we have to work together.
It's like Paranexus, you know, Pangea. Mm-hmm. You know, I work with all of you guys, Dusty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for crying, look at all of us who work together.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I there are so many groups, but that is the difference between science, again, those of us who are in it for science, and your entertainment. You know,
mm-hmm.
This is where those lines have got to be drawn. And they're blurred. Where the lines are drawn now, there are no lines. And that's where the lines are getting blurred. People are in it for the you know, we've got to establish those lines. There's the educational issue versus the entertainment issue. And
right.
Once that line is drawn in the sand, I think we will see some realism brought back into this field and some respect brought into it. And that's where we will, you know.
Then let's draw it together.
Mainstream will see us unite as colleagues, and you know, the entertainers can go on about their business.
Right.
Well, you know, the thing that really concerns me the very most, Ed, is the fact that sooner or later, what's going to happen is we're going to have some sort of debacle where a group goes in someplace and does more harm than good, and it gets into the mainstream, and people are just going to, you know, literally. And on one hand, it's going to give us all a black eye. Yet on the other, but by the other side of the coin too, it could help clean up some of the people in it that are in the field that don't belong in it to begin with. But you know, I just have this sneaking feeling that somebody somewhere is going to want to exorcise somebody or do something, you know, along those lines and do more harm than good. And you know, we're going to end up getting a black eye for it.
Well, that's already happening. I mean, but what are we going to do? You got groups out there. Let's look what has happened in the last 10, 15 years. We've had a little group who put out a nice little, there's a UFO group who put out a nice little box that decided, and I'm not naming names here because I don't believe in giving credit to individuals who perpetrate frauds. It's like giving a child who's throwing a temper tantrum attention.
So you don't want to talk about Biscardi then?
No, I'm not. I think that actually gives them the publicity they seek, and that's doing exactly what they wanted done in the first place. You're giving that child the attention they want,
right?
And you're also drawing attention to their cause. So somebody's going to run out, click on their website, and do exactly what they wanted done in the first place. So what I do is I'm going to tell you there's a little group who created this nice little box. It was a UFO cult group. And what they turned around and they did was they claimed, and they were on CNN, and I, that group, I will tell you, because I don't want people, everybody watches it anyway, but the nice little news group called the news conference, and they claimed that they had cloned a human baby at a time when cloning had just been outlawed. It was a nice UFO cult group.
Yeah, I recall that story.
And I know you know who I'm talking about. And so this nice little UFO cult group got on CNN, too. Imagine that. And then, of course, we've got another cryptozoological group going out there trying to claim other things here recently. So when you've got groups going out there perpetrating these frauds, and they can get on mainstream newscasts, it's going to be a problem for us all.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But, you know, much to our credit, though, too, Ed, we were the first people that, once it went mainstream, were the ones that were raising, the serious guys were out there raising red flags everywhere. So despite the fact that we got the black eye, I think by and large the paranormal community who are really serious stood up and said, no. We got to take a real close look at this, and if it doesn't stand to fire, then we're the first ones that are going to jump on it.
Well, I won't tell you what conversations me and a certain other individual were having on the phone that day. But I will tell you it was quite interesting, and I'm sure you guys have already talked about this one. But it was quite interesting that day. I think I spent about 12 hours on the phone.
Wow.
when that little flag went up.
Well, you know, that's part of policing our own. You know, it's part of the deal.
Yeah. But, you know, what gets me, and someone, I talked about this earlier in the week, too. When something like that happens and it's put out on, you know, we see these things on History Channel, we see them on Sci-Fi Channel. It came up over the alien autopsy video.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask a question on another show about alien autopsy video. And did I think it was real or something like that? And my reply was quite simple. If we see it on History Channel, we see it on Sci-Fi Channel, we see it on Fox, or we see it on some of these other things, and we're not seeing it on CBS or ABC or regular mainstream news, and I'm not talking, you know, these 24-hour news channels and crap, doesn't it send up some red flags?
Yeah. It's,
you know, if it's major news, they're going to be breaking in on every channel just like they did on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the aliens have landed, if the mothership is coming to land on the White House lawn, they're going to break through everything. You're going to hear on every radio show, if they have found a body somewhere in the woods, if something's happened, we're going to know about it. It's not going to be, you know, we'll show it next Tuesday on at 9 o'clock at night, you know, tune in, and they'll be broadcasting it for a week to tell you what's, you know, showing you the previews because it's pre-taped.
Yeah, whipping up the hype.
You know, exactly. It's not going to be a pre-taped show. It's going to be happening live at the time it happens.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that I think is really remarkable about that is, you know, where right now I'm just waiting for the perfect daylight photograph that's taken on somebody's digital camera of a close-up UFO. I mean, it's going to happen. It may have already happened, you know. We just haven't seen it posted yet. And what's really bad about it is, as I kind of talked about earlier, it'll immediately be trashed unless you get somebody like Bruce McAfee that can prove otherwise, as being computer-generated nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to be able to differentiate between what's really a truthful photograph and what's a hoax.
Well, you know, that the whole concept with these computer-generated things, that's another ball game. I'm watching people sit there on YouTube now putting out stuff with – and the fact that they're walking down – somebody put one on there – I had it up for a while on my MySpace until I just got sick of looking at it. I got tired of laughing. you know, a couple's walking through the woods, or what looks like the woods, but they're really not going anywhere. If you look at the background, they're standing in the same spot, and they just roll their camera back. They must have been out there all day waiting to make this film, or just fast-forwarding their time on their camcorder. But they're standing, and ironically, they just casually keep looking up at the sky every 2 seconds. You know? So you see it coming, yet their recorder's going. Why are they always watching the sky, but they're never really moving anywhere? And suddenly this object is just, I don't know, for some reason they're out walking on these rocks, which I don't know about you, but if I'm walking on rocks, I'm going to be watching where I'm going. Number one, I don't want to step on any snakes.
Shoes are good, too, if you're walking on rocks.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to get bitten by anything, you know, rattlers in particular, but I also don't want to lose my footing. And yet they're looking up at the sky. That part I really didn't understand. Not the safest thing to be doing. And, you know, all of a sudden this object comes barreling out of the sky, and this idiot decides to run over to it right before he allegedly gets abducted or disappears. Well, what idiot runs over to something like that? I mean, if you run over to an object that falls out of the sky, don't you kind of get what you have coming to you?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm into UFOs, but I'm not running over to one. I don't know if they're here to probe me or what, and I don't want to find out. I may be an investigator, but I surely don't want to run over there and meet E.T. firsthand because I don't know what his intentions are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to use your head. You have to be.
You know, I'm not ambassador for the planet. I don't want to make friends with E.T. because I don't know what he's here for.
Well, there's something that's in the regarding that's related to this, and Don's talking about technology and pictures and photos, and you know, I have to agree. I'm personally not real excited anymore over any picture or any photo, and I don't even place much importance on them anymore because they can be fabricated so easily. And even if you did get a real one, it's impossible to prove in most cases. On the other hand, EVPs are, I think, more meaningful. But the technology thing, I think, has gotten out of hand as well. You don't automatically use technology or certain gadgets, EMF meters, thermometers. You don't use them unless there's a need to use them. And so...
Well, don't get me started on now. I've been in the big debate over these damn things. You gotta piss me off on that one. I had gotten in a big argument over these in the last couple of weeks. Everybody's on these K2 meters.
Yeah.
You know, K2 meters are gauze meters, for crying out loud.
Yeah. Gauss meters.
People do not realize that when a gauze meter goes off, it's there to detect magnetic fields. And when it goes off, it sends out an electric impulse. They don't even realize how the technology works, what the device is intended to do. When a gauze meter goes off, it detects a magnetic field. It actually sends out its own electronic impulse. It sets off any other electromagnetic meter out there in the room with it. So when one person's K2 meter goes off, everybody else's tri-field meter goes off near it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So everybody's they're confirming the results of the K2 meter.
Yeah.
Automatically.
Beautiful.
Because all these idiots don't know what the hell their equipment is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I had one interview, and the host asked. I asked the host, "What is your K2 meter for?" And she says, "Well, I use it as a dowsing rod."
Oh boy.
That's real scientific.
Yeah. Electronic dowsing rod.
Yeah. You know, it'd be a hell of a lot cheaper to get you two twigs and hold them together. but that's another ball game. But people don't have any clue what their equipment's for. And this goes back to our conversation. You know, education, people. Education. Please, please learn what your equipment is used for if you're going to use it. You're talking about cameras, you know, and all this other stuff. If you don't know what the hell you're taking it out there for, why are you taking it out there? Some, you know, I use this example, and I'll use it again here. I can't preach it enough. People take out K2 meters. They take out EMF meters. They take it into homes. Homes are loaded with what? television sets.
Right.
Okay, yes, they turn the power off in these homes. And they say, well, all the power is off. Yes, but telephones have speakers. Computers have speakers. Televisions have speakers. What do speakers have in them? Magnets, dumbasses.
Now,
what does the M in electromagnetic field meter stand for? Magnetic.
I'm confused. What are you really trying to say here?
I'm telling you, people reach down between their heads, pull their heads out of their asses, and put down their EMF meters. If you're walking into a residence that is loaded with speakers, you're going to have magnets all over the place. And if you've got a really good meter, you're going to be picking up magnetic fields, not to mention the ones that are in the environment naturally.
And they're all man-made, you're right.
Learn how to use your equipment. Educate yourselves, people, please. You know, please don't watch it on television and believe education, common sense and education.
Right.
I can't stress that enough. Please, educate yourselves.
And the point is to not use a tool unless you have a reason to use it. It's not an automatic. I mean, hell, we've got tools, but unless there's – I've got a DVR system that I don't envision ever setting up again for a haunting unless there was extenuating circumstances that I needed it. I'm not going to set the thing up. I'm not going to sit there through boring, monotonous hours of nothingness on footage. And, you know, it's pointless. So there's a question in the chat room, Ed, on what tools do you recommend to quantify any paranormal type activity? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm like you. I will sit there and I'd rather turn off everything and do a sweep. But primarily I'm more now as far as doing anything with the paranormal. I'd rather study the individual.
Mm-hmm.
First.
Amen.
I'm more into the individual. I'm looking, my research right now is I'm working more on the end, following up with the scientific work, and the research I'm looking into now is more with the lobes of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
On that scientific end, I'm following up with Persinger stuff, but I'm also looking into some work with the
psychological?
It's psycho.
Pathology.
Psycho. Well, there's a new word for it. It's a combination of psychology and neurology. Psychoneurologic. That's the word I'm looking at. Psychoneurologic research that's being done on the temporal lobes of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And its effects on the phenomenon itself.
Yeah, interesting.
It's what it's being called now. It's psychoneurologic research. And it's a combination. What's happening is psychologists, and it's being some of the forerunners are in the University of Tokyo doing some great research there. It's kind of an extension of what Persinger and others have been doing in that area. But that's kind of where I'm going with that. That and EVP research. I think that if there's going to be research done in the field,
mm-hmm.
that EVP research seems to be
mm-hmm.
A good cross-connection between the human interaction with something that's there. Because we've got something we know exists, because we're
right.
working with a technology we do understand. We do understand radio technology. We do understand that portion of electronics. Enough that if we're going to get anywhere, that's where we, get our best link. That's one technology we do understand.
Well, that's great. Good stuff.
And we can interact with it. We can interact. We can ask direct questions, and we know that if we get a direct answer, we're interacting with something.
See, I think that's exactly where we need to look at, because you're talking about psychoneurological. Grant and I and several of us have really been honing in on the psychological foundation for some of this stuff, and those things are, those are two good areas to rule out the most of this phenomenon. Just like you say that most UFOs are explained by natural phenomena or our own stuff, and I mean Stan Friedman says the same thing, and he's right. And
yeah.
And so it's good stuff, man.
I concur with him 110 on it. On
oh,
that
yeah.
Well, fact, you know, it's especially intriguing when you think of mind and body link here. And the first thing that comes to mind is stigmata, you know, the mind's ability to cause the body to actually, you know, have you know, if, for the cases that, you know, that would be difficult to prove that somebody's not wiping their hands down with, you know, from they just got back from the slaughterhouse or something. But for actual folks that, you know, that manifest those symptoms, there's got to be a mind-body connection link.
Well, and if there is, you know, and that's a tough one to prove, too, because you've got cases in other, there's been other phenomena or rather other cases where they do that psychic surgery where you've seen people with false mm-hmm. thumbs and things. So
yeah.
Some of that you could even rule out as trickery, too.
Well, let me ask you your thoughts on one last issue, and then we're going to wrap it up. And something that Mike in the chat room has alluded to, and it's on the concept of interdimensional aspects to all of this. You know, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, what part or potential part in your estimation does the interdimensional aspect have to even, you know, to all of it, hauntings, ufology, parapsychology?
Okay. That gets into, you're really going out there with the all of, what is it? I'm not, it's your multi-dimensional or multi-dimensional theories there, and your Dr. What is it? Kaku? I can't pronounce his
Michio name.
Michio Kaku.
Michio, mm-hmm. Yeah. his theories. And I'd have to say that, you know, the potential possibility is there. One thing I don't buy as far as UFOs, and the reason I bring up UFOs in particular in this arena, is that I don't think that UFOs could be interdimensional. The spaceships, part of it, the actual physical craft, is because it doesn't make sense. If the technology existed for us to, and Michio Kaku, Dr. Kaku has said that, you know, if we were going to be able to travel through these multi-dimensions or multi-time streams, okay, if we have multi-time timelines,
mm-hmm.
Okay, which would be multi-timelines, which would be multiple dimensions or multi-dimensions would be multi-timelines, one and the same, however you want to look at them or perceive them to be, they would exist parallel to one another.
Right.
Okay?
M3.
Therefore, in other words, that eliminates the time paradox that Einstein had
sure.
left us with. It doesn't really exist. In other words, if I went back in time and killed my own mother, my own grandmother, I would still exist. I just, in this timeline, I just wouldn't exist in the timeline I killed her in.
Right.
Okay. So, and I would exist in every other timeline, just not that particular one. So Einstein's theory just wouldn't hold water
mm-hmm.
as far as the time paradox. So what would happen if I would be able to travel in time and also equally in dimensions, I would not need, if we had a, it would be more like traveling through, as he says, the movie Time Sliders or the movie Sliders
mm-hmm.
where we would actually go through a portal. We would physically be able to go through a portal or a dimension, or like the movie Stargate, where you have this big gate and you would just literally walk through it. All right? That would be more the reality of a wormhole
mm-hmm.
for space-time.
Mm-hmm.
That's more the reality of it.
Mm-hmm. Rather than intermission. Okay.
Exactly. So we would not necessarily need a physical craft to take us through that portal. Okay.
Yes,
the craft itself or the spaceship, the device to carry us there, would not be necessary. We would literally simply step through time. via that gate or via that wormhole.
Yeah,
so the craft itself would not be necessary. So the UFO issue doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit into that concept.
All right.
If we had the capability, all we would need is the gate. We wouldn't need the craft. We would simply need the gate. The craft is more or less the middleman.
Well, I got to tell you,
it eliminates that need.
Ed, it's been a great couple hours. We did go longer than we had anticipated, but you know what? A lot of good stuff came out of this. A lot of good thoughts, a lot of interesting stuff that you've experienced and been in researching, and we really appreciate your time. We really do.
Well, I've enjoyed it, guys.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. Maybe we can get you back sometime.
Yeah.
Anytime, guys.
Yeah, it would be great. And as far as our listeners, we really appreciate your activity in the chat room, appreciate your questions, appreciate your interest. I want to encourage you to follow up on some of the things we talked about in this show, especially tonight. Check out Paranexus.org. We're really trying to attract serious researchers, which, frankly, in this in this field is a bit daunting, but we're trying to attract them. We're trying to provide at least a forum and a means for people to get educated. So come on down and join us. Be a member if you're not already. Take a look at ParanexusAcademy.org for some courses. We're trying to add more. And be a part of it. Be a part of the serious research. Now, next week is Thanksgiving. We're not going to have a show next week. And the week after, we have the Alien Hunter show with Daryl Sims, which should prove to be a very, very interesting show, especially in the realm of abductions, because he claims to be an abductee himself. And so we're very interested to see what he's got to add to the whole big picture. But anyway, that having been said, Grant, good stuff tonight, huh?
Oh, absolutely. It's wonderful having Ed on the show, and want to wish everybody in our audience, since we're not going to be here next week, happy Thanksgiving. Have a very safe and happy holiday, and don't eat too much pumpkin pie. So, it was absolutely great to have you, Ed. It was a real pleasure.
It's been great, guys. I've enjoyed it.
All right, folks. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you in 2 weeks with Daryl Sims. Take care and good night. Bye. It's Paranexus Universe.